This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Ads from the Hum Day crew, and here's another one of our podcasts. Enjoy.
This is Peter Page.
Ginny and Adam here from Joy FM, and we're just...
Excellent. Hi, Ginny. Hi, Adam.
Hey, thank you very much for your time today.
Certainly. Happy to do it.
We wanted to ask you, first of all, it's been about 5 years since Queer as Folk wrapped up. Are you sick of talking about it yet?
You know what? Because it's been a little while now, it's not something I do every day, so I'm happy to talk about it. I'm very proud of the show and very proud of its impact, so it's fun to reminisce a little bit.
We were chatting to Scott Lau, who plays Ted, and he was telling us how you guys sort of met in an audition room an hour prior to the actual audition time, and he said originally you went for the role of Ted. Is that true?
That is true. When I was first brought in, I was brought in to read for Ted.
Adam and I were talking about how we picture Ted and we picture Emmett, and we couldn't quite... It was just a really interesting concept to think that you actually went for Ted.
Right. Well, it doesn't make much sense in the long run. I went in, I gave a really good audition for Ted, and the casting director said, "Great, I'm going to give you a call back." And I said, "Let me read for Emmett." And she said, "Did you not hear me? I'm going to give you a call back." And I said, "Just let me read for Emmett." And she said, "All right, fine." And I read for Emmett, and she said, "I don't think I've ever said this in my entire history, but which role would you like to come back and meet the producers for?"
Wow. Said,
"You know what? You brought me in for Ted. Let me come back for Ted. I don't know why I knew to do this, but I went in, I read for Ted. Within 30 seconds, the producer stopped me and said, 'You're not Ted.' And I kind of nodded, and they said, 'We'd love for you to read for Emmett.' And I looked at the casting director and smiled, and I said, 'I think that's a great idea.' I was already prepared, so I read for Emmett, and the rest, as they say, is history."
Although the character of Emmett was quite carefree and lighthearted, you had some pretty hard issues that you tackled throughout the 5 series, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And what was so fun about playing Emmett, and why I think ultimately I ended up with the best character, is I got to do all these great comic storylines, and then they would pull the rug out from under me, and then I would, you know, get devastated. I mean, that crystal meth stuff and George's death and some of the storylines with the football player, like, those were really impactful, meaningful stories, and I loved doing them.
One thing revolutionary about Emmett was, what I found is that his character in pretty much gay television history and in Queer as Folk as well, he was the only character that was very self-loving. He wasn't very self-loathing. He was very out and open, and he was very comfortable with who he is. Was it interesting playing a character like that?
That is, honest to God, what I based the entire character on. When I read the pilot, I looked at that and I said, here's an effeminate gay man who likes himself. And I said, and I haven't seen that on TV. Like, basically, the more effeminate a gay character is, the more he's supposed to hate himself and the more likely he is to die. And I was so happy to see that, and so I started really building the character from that, and the writers really responded to that notion. I don't think that they had even gone into that particularly consciously, but when I sort of highlighted it, they sort of responded, and together we created this really complicated but self-loving, you know, queen.
And what's the response been when you've met people to having a character like Emmett in the show?
I think at first people were suspicious of him. A lot of people thought, oh, Christ, it's a queen. And even I, honestly, I kind of thought for a while, like, oh, how did I end up playing the queen? On a show with 5 gay men, how did I end up playing the queen? You know? But ultimately, as we uncovered more and more of him and he became more and more well-rounded, people really opened up to him. And I think by the end, he became a lot of people's, you know, favorite. So I'm very proud of that.
Well, he definitely was my favorite. And what I liked about him, too, was the fact that he... You're welcome. Actually, to be on a personal note, I actually named my first car after your character.
You did? Oh, that's very sweet. What kind of car was it?
It was a Toyota Corolla Sika 92 model. It was a kind of a little of a bomb, but Emmett was its name. Emmett was a perfect name. It had a nice backside.
I like the way you're thinking.
But Peter, what I was going to say is Emmett's character, you had this Emmett had this attitude of I think the quote was "fuck 'em all, Honeycutt," like, you were, "I'm here, I'm queer, get used to it," pretty much.
Yeah.
And the speech you gave to the footballer was great, because it was something to do with lines on "you get called names you get spat at, but you're gay and you'd rather get spat on for being gay than being something you're not. And that was a very good message to convey to people who were, I think, struggling with coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, what a great thing. I mean, just the whole show in general, you know, the sort of the theme of the whole show is no apologies, no regrets. And that was really useful for me as a gay man who grew up in the 80s when there weren't really any visible role models. That was a great, and it's certainly a message I'm really happy to have left for those behind me.
Because one of the first gay characters you saw on TV was on Ricky Lake, I heard.
It wasn't a character. It was a real person.
Oh, that's
Ricky Lake
real.
Show. They would do these, like, you know, this insane thing where they would bring gay people on to talk about being gay. Like, it was so, like they were bringing, you know, pedophiles on or something. Like, it was so sensationalized, and it was always some hopped-up club kid who was like, I'm gay, okay? So you just deal with that, okay? But we would, like, call each other and be like, oh, Ricky Lake's got gay people on today. You know, and that was it. And that was, by the way, that was when I was out of college. That was in the early 90s and when I lived in New York. So it was a long time coming. There had not been much.
It must be amazing, like 10 years after seeing that on TV, you're in a show as queer as folk, as revolutionary. It's just amazing to see that television and the way people think have come a long way.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, I was born in 1969, which is the year of the Stonewall Riots here in the States, which is considered the birth of the United States gay civil rights movement. And so in my lifetime, we've gone from getting raided in bars to now 4 states in the U.S. have gay marriage. And it's the major topic of conversation. Like, it's just insane what has happened in what is, in the course of human history, a really short period of time. And I'm so proud to have been able to be a little, you know, a little thumbtack on that timeline.
And are you still active in the gay community about those kind of gay rights in America?
I am. I'm on the board of the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, which is the largest gay and lesbian organization in the world, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
It has a $45 million operating budget and provides social services to kind of all aspects of the gay community. So that's become the bulk of my charitable and fundraising work. But I also do stuff for the Human Rights Campaign and all sorts of political and charitable groups in the country. Kind of, you know, if I'm available and people ask, I try to show up because it's the least I can do.
So do you see it'll ever happen in America where you can get married in every state of the USA?
I absolutely think that's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen in the next 5 years, but I think within a decade we'll be looking at universal gay marriage in the States. I don't think it's that far off.
Peter, if Queer as Folk was released now onto the television screens, do you think it would receive a different sort of audience and different sort of reception to what it did 9 years ago?
Well, probably. I mean, it's interesting. It might receive less attention, you know. But it's hard to say because we would be dealing with Queer as Folk in a post Queer as Folk world.
Exactly.
Part of what changed the dialogue about gay people is Queer as Folk, and I don't mean to overstate, you know, sort of my own importance or the show's importance, but at least here in the States, that notion of gay sexuality was really pretty freaking provocative at the time, and we needed to kind of get in people's faces about it so that they could chill out.
What I liked about Queer as Folk is it opened up avenues for shows like The L Word, My Two Gay Dads, and gay storylines being included a lot more in mainstream media. But what I really liked about Queer as Folk is the fact that you guys can sort of come out and talk about these things, and you kind of put it into a more universal context.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Yeah, what I always said about the show is that we gave the world the vocabulary. We gave the world the mechanics. Like, there's no excuse for kind of not knowing how things work. I will tell you this. After the pilot of Queer as Folk, I can't tell you, friends of mine, straight friends of mine came to me and said, I didn't know you guys could have sex face-to-face.
Wow.
Well, what I found interesting too, Peter, is that it's half the audience, and this is the phenomenal thing about Queer as Folk, 50% of your audience was actually straight women.
At least.
And the funny thing is, like, you'd think a series like that would only target a certain niche of the or a gay community, so to speak, but it actually reached out to straight people, and like your straight friend said, they actually learnt things about the gay community that they never knew before.
And I think that's why people tuned in at first. What I always say is they came for the queer, they stayed for the folk. That they came to see something weird and exotic and titillating that they hadn't seen before, but then really, pretty quickly, you realize that the love stories are all universal. The emotional stories are just the same. The only difference is mechanics. The only difference is how you do it and how hard. I mean, that's really it. We all know what it's like to get our hearts broken. We all know what it's like to have, you know, our friendships fall apart. We all know what it's like to lose our jobs. We all know what it's like to find love. And that's all that these guys were going through.
The cast, the executive producers, and the writers went on Larry King Live on CNN, and you had this critic that came on that described the show as pornographic, pedonistic, and promiscuous. I remember the executive producers going and, you know, batting for you guys. What was your vision on what that guy said?
I don't even remember that guy. Isn't that funny? Like, at the time, I'm sure I was outraged, but I don't, like, that has so not stayed with me. I remember being on Larry King, and I remember that he couldn't keep straight who played what part. But God bless him. Like, he was just, you know, doing the best he could, trying to make the best case he could. And the good news about the whole gay civil rights struggle is we won.
Exactly.
It's not over, but we've already won. It, you know, the generation here in the States, the next generation of kids coming up, they couldn't care less about sexuality. It is such a non-issue to them. It's hilarious. They don't. My godchildren, who are 9 and 13, when we just had the whole, I don't know if you guys know about the whole Prop 8 thing here in California.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, they made same-sex marriage legal, and then there was a big proposition to take it away, and we spent, you know, almost $100 million fighting on both sides, and just a huge waste of time and energy. But my godchildren were literally like, fundamentally couldn't understand. They were like, why don't they want them to get married? Like, they couldn't even get it. You know, we've so turned the tide and made this world a better place that I can't help but think we've all done something right.
Have you found that the role of Emmett, which you played for 5 years, is it hard to shake him off? Is it still very... Do people sort of identify you as Emmett still?
You know what? Yes. I mean, yes, they do. And it has created some challenges in my post-queer as folk career, I'm not going to lie. But it was worth it, certainly. And it's starting... The stink's starting to wear off. It's finally people are starting to, you know, look at me differently and take me seriously for other kinds of work. So,
speaking of challenges post queer as folk, you also being openly gay, has that caused any issues working in Hollywood?
Well, that's actually what I'm talking about. Between playing Emmett and being openly gay, I sort of gave myself a double whammy. Of just, you know, making sure everybody remembered that I'm a big old poofta. So it's interesting. The biggest challenges I find in the Hollywood community are with other gay men, believe it or not. They're the ones most likely, and then this is not universal, of course, I'm generalizing, but they're the ones most likely to try to kind of keep me in that box.
Why do you think they're doing that?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but they're always the one. I was just up for a pilot for a new series, and the executive producer wanted me, and the casting directors wanted me, and the executive who was in charge of casting for the network said no. He said he was the one who put his foot down. And I know him. I know him socially. I consider him a friend. But he's the one who said no. He's not right for this.
Oh no! And
it's a true story. It's a true story. That just happened last week.
Do you think a lot of your straight co-actors or colleagues go through the same thing? Do you think they're typecast as well?
They are. I mean, anyone who does a TV series is typecast. That there's no doubt about that. You spend 5 years telling people you're one kind of person, and that's what people are going to remember, you know, and presume. So that always comes with the prize. But that being said, yeah, I think it's harder. I think I'm by being openly gay, I think I made it a little bit more challenging for myself.
Now, you've also made a move, or you're very interested in writing and directing. Did that start while you were in Queer as Folk?
It did, actually. I realized during the show that I really, being a theater actor, you have direct communication with the audience. You're on stage, and you are the one telling them the story. Being an on-camera actor, you do your work, and then people go away, and they edit and shape things, and they're the ones actually communicating with the audience. So I was craving that kind of direct line of communication as an artist. And so I decided I wanted to write and direct something. I wrote a feature called Say Uncle that I ended up casting Kathy and Jimmy and Gabrielle Union and Lisa Edelstein, who's on House, and Melanie Linsky, who's on Two and a Half Men, a bunch of really great, and who was in Heavenly Creatures, Melanie Linsky. She's from New Zealand. I cast all those people in it. It made a great movie I was very proud of. We got a little theatrical release. And then I directed a second movie that stars Michelle Clooney called Leaving Barstow, which I shot about a year and a half ago. So, and it's coming out in the States later this year.
Say Uncle, when you shot that, I actually read up that it was actually filmed in 18 days in 19 different locations. What a tight schedule, because normally a feature takes months to film, but you did in like less than 3 weeks.
Yeah, you know what, though? I mean, yes, and I'm very proud of that, but that's how independent films are made. Like, any independent filmmaker is going to tell you, you know, any independent filmmaker who gets more than 3 weeks is loving life. Like if you got 24 days, everyone's all, ooh, jealous, cushy, you know. So, yeah, big, great big features, you know, take, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, but no, little indies, you know, if you get more than 3 weeks, you're loving life.
Say Uncle is a storyline about homophobia in suburbia. What I found interesting in this, you cast Kathy Najimy, and I sort of saw her still as Sister Mary Patrick from Sister Act. She was this sweet, bubbly lady. I just could not look at her the same way again when I saw the trailer.
Well, that's sort of why she wanted to do it and why I loved her for it. I knew her work. I knew some of her theater work. She did a show with Mo Gaffney called The Kathy and Mo Show years and years ago when I was living in New York. And so I knew from that that she had this sort of political sensibility and the darkness in her that I needed for this character. And I thought it would be such a great kind of, you know, flip side for her after playing, you know, the bubbly Chevy Nun. And she totally agreed. And she's brilliant in the movie. She's brilliant in it.
She's fantastic. We actually didn't get the movie here in Australia, but on the trailer, and I saw a few clips on YouTube, it was great because she, like I said, you know, she was the bubbly nun from Sister Act, and then you see this huge different side to her. It's like, oh, wow. You know, it sort of shows the depths. Maybe in my head I typecast her, but I didn't mean to, but it shows the depths of the character.
Yeah, well, and it certainly shows her talents as an actress, which are formidable.
Absolutely.
So continuing on, these days, doing more writing and directing, or are you in front of the audience and acting more at the moment?
You know, I've been doing a little bit of both. Still, I'm still acting for sure. I did a production of The History Boys here in Los Angeles, and I just shot an episode of a new Stephen Boschko series this past week, and I did a CSI Miami, and, you know, I've definitely been keeping busy as an actor, but I have a writing partner. We're having kind of great success together, which I'm really grateful for. We sold a pilot a couple years ago. We just sold a TV movie, and we just sold a feature to the guys who made Being John Malkovich. So we're keeping mighty busy.
Leaving Barstow, which you cast Michelle Clooney, who was from Queer as Folk, who played Melanie, you actually told her at the Queer as Folk lunch reunion that she got the part.
You're right, I did. I did. That was a great moment. We had decided, I think, a day or two before, and I made everyone keep quiet so that I could tell her on camera, because I know Michelle so well, and I knew she would cry, so I decided to exploit that for the cameras, and I also knew Michelle would love it, that it was exploited for the cameras, so I was very confident in my decision.
A very loving relationship you seem to have.
Yeah, we're all really close. That's one of the great things about this show. We're all still friends. We all still see each other. We get together for the odd poker party at Scott's house and have dinner, and it's a really special bond we have.
I heard Dame Madame Gless introduced you to the wonders of poker. Is that true?
I don't think Dame. She hosted the poker parties in Toronto. I don't know that I can't. I don't think she can take credit for introducing me to poker. But yes, did she tell you that I call her the Dame?
No, Scott actually called her Dame Gless.
We started that her first year. I started calling her Dame Gless because we were talking about Judi Dench or something like that, and I decided that she should, that if she were British, that she would be a dame. So we started calling her Dame Gless, and we still do to this day.
Going to things a bit, little bit more lighthearted, we're looking at your website, and we believe you enjoy tennis and sushi. Now, are they at the same time?
It's very hard to eat raw fish while you're doing a backhand slice. But I will say this. I enjoy tennis and sushi, and I cannot actually do either. I can't make sushi, and I can't really play tennis. You know what? I'm going to try, actually, to come to Australia for the Open this year.
Oh, wow.
That's my goal, to get down there. Now that Virgin Australia is offering some really good flights and stuff, I'm going to try to get down. I've been to Wimbledon. I've been to the U.S. Open. My goal is to get to all four of the Grand Slams. So I'm going to try to come down to Melbourne for January.
So you've never been to Australia before, have you?
I have not.
I have not.
In fact, I was offered two different trips during Queer as Folk to come down to promote the show, and both times I got jobs and I couldn't do it. It was devastating because I really, really want to come down. So if any of your listeners want to bring me down for some work, they should feel free to contact me.
So we're always interested when people from America haven't been to Australia. What do you know about Australia?
I have a lot of good friends who are Australian, so I think I have a fairly, good concept of the country. I do know that 9 of the world's 10 most poisonous snakes are in Australia, so that honestly kept me out of the country for the first 25, 30 years of my life. Really, I would imagine that they were going to come meet me at the plane.
There's at least 3 of those poisonous snakes in the studio with us at the moment.
Really?
Yeah.
We're actually standing on the desk. We're standing on the desk with the microphone in our hands talking to you.
But there's a kangaroo in the corner that'll keep him at bay.
Oh, there you go.
Now, Peter, on that lighthearted note, I was reading your website too, and you're actually quite, you can speak Spanish, French, and you can do American Sign Language too.
Yeah, my sign language has gotten really bad, though. That was true when that's been on my resume since I graduated from acting school. And when I graduated from acting school, I was actually pretty good at sign language, and now it's just terrible. I've forgotten everything, and that's really the only sign I remember now is forgot.
Has there been instances where you've had to use the sign language?
Have I had to use... I've used it to get laid.
How?
There was a hot deaf guy in a gay bar. What do you think? How do you think I used it? Have I ever used it? I don't know that I've ever used it for work, although it's interesting. There's a theater company in L.A., the biggest deaf theater company in the country is Deaf West, and they've done some shows that have gone to Broadway and stuff, and so you never know. I could be called upon.
Now, one last skill I have to pull you up on as well is armed and unarmed combat.
Yeah. That's acting school stuff. Like, unarmed combat is, throwing fists and knowing how to do, flips and lifts and how to have a big old kind of Western saloon brawl.
Uh-huh.
Armed combat is knowing how to fight with a broadsword and a rapier and an épée and cloak and dagger and all that stuff.
You're sounding slightly intimidating all of a sudden.
Yeah. I will say this. My movement teacher, who did our combat teacher in acting school, because I was this big old fag, he was sure I was going to be terrible at this. Like, he just had already decided, that I was going to be his big sissy failure. But when we got into class, he every year at the end of the semester, he was like, "You're fantastic at this." And I was like, "I know!" So it just goes to show. I have never in my life been in a real fight. So if I ever do get in one, I'm going to have to throw a fake punch and make the noise on my own chair.
Peter, you've actually dabbled into a bit of animation as well. I hear you've done an animation series called Rick and Steve, and it involves some booth acting or booth overacting, like you called it.
Yes, exactly. I do. Animated series. It's such an interesting thing because as an actor, I prepare, I think, I arc out my journey for my character. And I come in all ready to go, and none of that is useful, at least not on this animated series. They really, the guy's looking for a certain line reading, and I'm happy to give it to him. I think the show has started down under.
Has it?
I hope. Have you guys not heard about it at all?
No, I only saw the clip on YouTube.
Oh, it's really freaking funny. Like, really, really funny. Rick and Steve, it is the most... It's sort of like South Park for gays. Like, it's just so inappropriate. really vulgar. Lesbians, crawling around rest areas looking for sperm to impregnate themselves. Like, just as, I mean, you know, there's like a 60-year-old gay guy in a wheelchair who has AIDS and his 19-year-old party boy boyfriend. Like, it's just insane. And I play Steve, the butch top who likes his creatine and not much else.
It's interesting that you went from a very flamboyant character as Emmett to this butch Steve guy.
You know, yes, absolutely. That's one of the reasons I took the job, because it makes it more interesting for me.
We've got 101 questions sitting in front of us. We're not going to ask you all of them, but we're actually going to get you to choose three different numbers, and we're going to ask you those questions. So hit us with one number between 100 and 101.
42.
You can only listen to three CDs for the rest of your life. What are they?
The Beatles, The White Album, Rufus Wainwright, probably Want One, but maybe Want Two and maybe Poses. So I don't know. And third one, Madonna, Like a Prayer.
You had to throw Madonna in there.
Yeah, but that's the, I mean, come on. That has Express Yourself, Like a Prayer, and Vogue all on it.
Honestly, I would have chosen Confessions over that, but I don't know.
Confession? Really? You would have chosen Confessions on the Dance Floor? Over
oh, I think that's the greatest album ever.
More recent.
Pardon?
I said that's just because it's more recent.
Could be. I still think it's the greatest album ever made, which is a very big call, I know. Okay, hit us with another number.
Another number?
Yeah.
64.
If you are given a chance to travel past, where would you go specifically and why?
I would probably, I have so many. I mean, I would love to have been around sort of the 20s and 30s with the Noel Coward set. I would love to have gone back to the court of Louis the 14th, sort of when Molière was writing. But I'm probably going to say I would love to go back to the Prussian Empire. So early 1700s in what is now Germany.
Final number?
99.
Okay, you're working in a movie ticketing office and two Siamese twins come to the movie. Would you charge them for one ticket or two?
I would charge them for two. They're getting twice the enjoyment and they're going to take up two seats.
Fair enough. Good answer. Now, one final question I did have for you is, Sex and the City made a movie a few years after they finished. Has there ever been talk about there being a queer as folk movie?
You know, I just don't think we have a big enough fan base to support that kind of expenditure. You know, I mean, you could do a very small movie like that, but I don't think anybody is going to fund that. And I also, Sex and the City was a little bit about those women getting older, so those questions of sort of where are you now are still interesting. With Queer as Folk, a little bit, if the guys are still hanging out at the bars, it's kind of pathetic. And if they're not hanging out at the bars, then it's not really the show anymore, you know? I'm sure there's a smart way to do it, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
Knowing Emmett the best in the world, where would Emmett be if Queer as Folk was still happening today? Where do you think he'd be?
You know, I mean, Emmett, the crazy thing about Emmett was, like, he was always up for some new adventure. So, like, Emmett's probably right now, you know, he's taken a job as a tour provider, you know, in Brazil. So he's on the beach in, you know, Iwo Jima, or in Ipanema, and, you know, in his little Speedo, having just gotten the wax job.
And would he have found love, do you think?
I hope so. I mean, that was one, I have to say, that was, to me, the one kind of ripoff at the very, very end of the series, is that I really wanted Emmett to end up with the football player. I really wanted Emmett to have that, to know that he came back and that they were going to end up together. Because he was such an interesting kind of yin to Emmett's yang.
I was waiting for Emmett to come down to Australia and find love there.
Yeah, well, I he's up for it. Like I said, somebody send me a ticket.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you very much for being... I know you helped Ginny in her experiences coming out, and also for being my playing my favourite character in Queer as Folk for the 5 years. Good luck with everything you do, and we hope to see you very soon in Australia. We'll bring you down here and we'll introduce you to some of our snakes.
Wow. That sounded dirty. Thank you guys so much. I wish you all the best, and stay in touch. Good luck with the show.
Hey, this is Ads from the Hump Day Crew. Thank you so much for listening to another one of our podcasts, and thank you for supporting the Hump Day Crew and Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.